You be the judge, 39 through 46.
Welcome back to You Be the Judge, episode 6. We'll be discussing the Sefer Mimamakim, questions 39 through 46. Question 39. A man the Germans beat deaf and mute. Under the German occupation, the Jews were nothing more than slaves. Our children were taken from us and killed, leaving us broken and childless. Whatever we had was stolen by a brazen nation that hated the old and took no pity on the young. A yoke of steel was placed around our necks. The soil we had to dig up was like rock. We served our enemy in hunger, thirst, cold, and in dirt. We were oppressed, robbed, and abandoned by the world. And food, which meant the difference between life and death, was something we were forced to struggle every single day. We received just enough food to keep us alive for another day of slave labor, but beyond all the other little daily cruelties, an edict was issued that forbade us from leaving our workplace in case we were considered even looking through the garbage heaps for scraps of food. In Tasha Bebe's, in 1942, I was approached by Rav Moshe Ben Aryeh, who davened in the Beis Medrash, where I taught and davened, the Abi Yecheskel Kleis in Slabotka. Rav Moshe had been beaten so severely that he could no longer speak or hear. Even though the savages had cracked his bones, battered his flesh, and left him unconscious, his intelligence had been left unimpaired. Though totally deaf and unable to speak, he was able to communicate in writing. He expressed in writing his anguish at the cruelty done for him for having violated the German edict against leaving his place on the work line. He had not been able to look on and watch his fellow Jews starving, their flesh turning brown and shriveling and blackening from prolonged hunger. Despite the danger involved, he had left his workplace and gone into the fields during the potato harvest to gather some vegetables that might help his fellow oppressed. He had been caught in his crime, and to serve as a warning to other hungry criminals, they had beaten him so viciously that he lost his hearing and his ability to speak. Although he gradually learned to live with this new world of total silence, he was profoundly disturbed that he had been robbed of his ability to daven out loud. In addition, since he could not recite a bracha to Hashem in his own voice, he was worried that he would not be called up to the Torah any longer. Also, since someone with his disabilities cannot be counted a minyan, he was worried whether his disability would render him unable, luckily, to be part of a minyan. He requested that I find a halacha solution that would allow him to be included in a minyan, and even more importantly, that would allow him to be called up to the Torah. Rav Ashi writes, I rule that he was certainly allowed to be included in a minyan, but including him as one of the allotted members called up to the Torah seemed impossible. To uplift his shattered spirit, I suggest that he be called to read the Torah together with the reader, and while the Balkaris were reciting the brachas, he concentrated on each word. When he read my ruling, his light lit up and said, Rebbe, you have revived me. May Hashem console you in great life. Question number 40. Reciting Nachem and Berachas HaMazon and Tisha B'Av. As mentioned previously, among the decrees that the Germans issued was the requirement that the ghettos supply a fixed number of slave laborers every day and every night. On Tisha B'Av, Toshin Beis, we were gathered at the home of the Nachomovich family on 7 Vitana Street to Daven Ma'ariv before we read Megillas Eicha and mourned the destruction of Beis HaMikdash. At this time, we also mourned the sacred and holy Jews of Lithuania, its Torah geniuses and its simple and pure Jews, who all of it had been butchered. May Hashem recall them all, together with the rest of the world's righteous, and avenge the blood of his servants. In the midst of us saying the Kinas, the Tisha B'Av Tfilas, the Germans burst in, and with terrifying shouts, grabbed the assembled and rushed us off to compulsory labor, complaining that the Arbeitsamt, the labor office, had not provided enough Jews for that night shift. When they realized that the assembled Jews had been mourning the Jewish destruction, they blasphemed Hashem and ridiculed the Jewish people. What are you inquiring about? What are you hoping for? There's no hope for you. You're never going to be safe from our hands. They beat us and chased us out of the house, driving all the assembled, young and old, to the airfield. At the airfield, we were forced to work throughout the night without a single moment of respite from the intense back-breaking labor. Privately, each of us continued to grieve bitterly at the fate of the Jewish people being subjected to so implacable an enemy. The work was so laborious that we could only hope that with the coming of daylight, we would be replaced by the day shift laborers. Our hopes were dashed when we were not allowed to return to the ghetto, and we were forced instead to work through the following day as well. Those who did not have the strength suffered horribly cruel beatings at the hands of the Germans. We were kept mourning throughout the day into the following night without a moment's rest. As the day progressed and labor did not stop, many Jews fell to the ground unconscious, despite the German taskmaster's harsh beatings to keep them working. Of course, the ceaseless labor and beatings made it impossible to fast at Tisha B'Av. Thus, when the Germans gave out its bits of bread with the black soup called Yusnik, I made sure everyone ate without regard for the fast day. I was now asked the following question. Because we ate bread, do we say Nachem when we say Berachas HaMazon? Says Rav Ashi, since most of the Kovar Afaris agree that Nachim should be said wherever a meal is eaten on Tisha B'Av, I ruled that the slave laborers should say Nachim when they recited the brachas after they had finished eating. 41. Risking one's life to study Torah or Daven. In Elul of Tashin Beis, the Germans issued an edict forbidding the Jews of the ghetto to gather in shuls or in the study halls. Many of the broken-hearted residents, their bodies bent and racked from long days of slave labor, would forget some of their suffering when they assembled in the shuls at fixed hours for the study of Torah. Listening to the encouraging words of the rabbis, who were enduring the same tortured labor, instilled in them a drop of hope in the Holy One of Jewry, who would ultimately avenge the shedding of his servant's blood. Despite the German decree, I taught in the Beis Medrash known as the Abi Chesel's Chaz in Slavonka. When the Germans turned this Beis Medrash into a prison, I moved my group into the Havoya Sameis Chaz and then into the Shul in Gabinovich's house on Vitana Street and then the Chaim Shafer Shul on Verena Street next to the Altenstadt. I devoted my time to daily lectures I gave to the Haris Bechorim. In each of these shuls, I tried to strengthen the crushed spirits of our people. I made every effort to teach that just as one must bless Hashem for the good that He gives us, so one must bless Hashem for the evil that He unleashes upon us. Instead of eating until despair, we must wait for Hashem's assistance. For Hashem is good to those who seek Him, those who seek Him out, and wait for Him. The Germans plotting treachery after treachery were aware that this wall of hope and comfort inside the shuls gave many Jews courage and strength to withstand their tribulations. It was no surprise then when the Germans issued a decree forbidding public tefillah and Torah study under the punishment of death. Rav Tali Weintraub, Hashem Kim Tovah, the Gabbai of the Gabinovich Shul, asked me whether Torah law obligated him to risk his life to daven with his daily minyan and compel him to risk his life for Torah study. Says the following, I did not have the heart to rule that every Jewish man should risk his life in order to study Torah or daven with minyan. There are few with a purity of thought that could raise them to the level of Daniel and his comrades, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, all of whom risked their lives to sanctify Hashem, even they were not bound to. On the other hand, how could I forbid anyone to risk his life? All Jews possess holy souls originating at the highest level above. And according to Halacha, each individual must probe the degree of his personal love and awe of Hashem to determine his level of service to Hashem and his consequent right or duty to make sacrifices. Beyond any doubt, the Master of Justice and Mercy guides each person to act with sensitivity. In fact, the sacred children of the living Hashem acted as they had always done. They continued to study Torah and daven with their fellow Jews, even under the risk to their lives. Even on Rosh Hashanah, Tavshin Gimel, the Jews did not fear the Germans would hear the powerful blast of the shofar during davening. Not only did the Jews gather in many houses of tefillah set up for the holiday, but in the ghetto hospital, doctors who had assimilated almost completely in the local culture also defied the German decree and risked their lives in order to daven and hear Tekiyah Shofar. I too, despite the decrees, continued to hold regular daily classes in public. When the students at Tiferes Bachurim were pride, Mr. Singer's building on 8 Kaklo Street, they built a highway electricity. Upon completion of their job, they even held a dedication ceremony. Our Torah study and Tefillah apparently found favor in the eyes of Hashem, and we were privileged to survive the enemy, says the Mishnah Berurah. Says the Sefer Mimel Makim. On Chav Zayin of Tashin Beis, I was asked whether a woman who would become pregnant in the ghetto might undergo an abortion because of the German decree threatening the life of any Jewish woman found to be pregnant. Says Rav Ashi, in that situation, where it was clear from the Germans that if they were to discover a pregnancy, neither the woman nor the fetus would survive, I ruled that it was permitted for it to abort the fetus in order to save the woman's life. Number 43. A castrated man is chazan. A few weeks before Rosh Hashanah Tavshin Gimel, when the Jewish prisoners of the Covenant Ghetto were making their plans to blow shofar and daven together to Hashem for mercy and redemption, the Germans decreed that the Jews were not to hold any public gatherings on pain of death. Despite the danger, many minyanim were organized in the ghetto. Individuals who had never davened before joined in. Even Dr. Isaac Aharon, an assimilationist, arranged a minyan in the ghetto hospital for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. At that time, the following question arose. It turned out that the man chose to lead the Yom Kippur Tefillos in the hospital, a Jewish man with a beautiful voice, whose piety and unblemished character met the specific halacha requirements for a tefillah, a leader on such an awesome day, had been castrated by the bestial Germans. Does this physical blemish disqualify him from leading the worshippers on Yom Kippur? And on this, Rav Ashi answers, for a number of reasons, I ruled he should be allowed to lead the davening. First, because the blemish is not visible. Second, The Jews very much wanted him. And finally, the arrangement was not a permanent one. I also joined the many of doctors and nurses who endowed in the same intense devotion in defiance of the German decree. Question 44. Cremation to avoid burial among Gentiles. During the bitter year of 5702 to 1942, my friend Reb Mordechai Yav came to you with a disturbing problem. He had received a letter from a relative who had escaped to Belgium and had found shelter in a village as a Christian. This man's suffering had brought him on the verge of death. He was agitated at the thought that when he died, his neighbors would bury him among Gentiles. How could his body rest in a Gentile cemetery? He therefore wrote to Reb Mordechai to find out whether Halacha allowed for his body to be cremated after death, thus avoiding a Gentile burial. Since cremation had become fashionable, he had no doubt that his neighbors would honor such a wish. The Sefer Mamakim answers, the Torah requires burial for the dead, but the obligation to fulfill it rests with the relatives of the deceased. The dead person, while still alive, must do nothing to make his burial impossible, such as ordering the cremation of his remains. Should he do so, he causes immeasurable anguish to his soul in the world of the spirit for having made it impossible to fulfill a commandment of the Torah. There is no way creation could be permitted. Even if the man's ashes are buried for the sake of cremation, constitute a desecration of the corpse. In addition, cremation removes the possibility of eventual atonement granted to those who are buried. The burial of one's ashes cannot compare for the cremation in terms of this atonement. I therefore rule that the man dare not order his body cremated, but therefore should rely on our bountiful Creator, whose mercies extend to all. His hiding of his Jewishness and living among non-Jews had come about unwillingly, solely out of his desire to save his life. Therefore, he should not be guilty about being buried among non-Jews. Ordering his cremation, however, would bring evil upon his soul. Ideally, he should arrange to be buried outside the Gentile cemetery and to have the relatives informed of the exact location. This would be the best arrangement. Then perhaps with the passage of time, when Hashem shows mercy to his people and releases them from their troubles, someone might be able to exhume his body and then bury it at a different location in a Jewish cemetery. Question 45. Reciting the bracha has not made me a slave, shalayasani of it, in the ghetto. We, the Jews in the Covenant Ghetto in Lithuania, were completely enslaved by the Germans. We worked to the bone, night and day without rest. We were starved and paid nothing. The German enemy decreed our total annihilation. We were completely dispensable, and in the end, most of us would die. One morning during davening, Rabbi Yosef, who was leading the congregation in the morning service, reached the bracha, who has not made me a slave. He shouted bitterly to the master of all masters, how can I recite the bracha of a free man? How can a hungry slave repeatedly abuse and demean praises created by uttering, Shalai Yastani Ovid, you did not make me a slave. I am a slave. Every morning as Rabbi Yosef led the tefillah, he let out the same cry. And many of those who joined him in tefillah felt the same way. I was then asked for the Torah ruling on his question. Should the bracha be omitted because it seemed to be a travesty, in which case it would be forbidden to recite it, or was it forbidden to alter or skip any part of the tefillah text established by our sages? Says the Shuvah. One of the earliest commentators on the tefillah points out that the bracha was not formulated in order to praise Hashem for our physical liberty, but rather for our spiritual liberty. I therefore rule that we should not skip or alter this bracha under any circumstances. On the contrary, despite our physical activity, we are more obligated than ever to recite the bracha to demonstrate to our enemies that even if we are physically slaves, we are not spiritual slaves. We're spiritually free. Question number 46. Opening a grave to return lost property. I was asked by my good friend Mordechai Yav Hashem Kutayim about a problem linked to the hunger we all suffered. Those who never lived in the ghetto cannot understand our desperation. Life inside the walls deteriorated day by day. In order to obtain a bit of bread, we sold our garments or other possessions. There was no lack of sellers in the ghetto. But where was one to find a buyer? The ghetto was sealed. No one could enter or leave without German's permission. All Jews were in the same dilemma. We sought bread and found hunger. We were willing to sell whatever we had that had not yet been looted by the Germans, but the Germans forbade non-Jews from entering the ghetto. Violators would force their lives. Each day, however, the Germans took 1,000 Jews out of the ghetto to work as slave laborers. At night, they returned. Outside the walls, some of the laborers occasionally made secret contests with non-Jews. With the help of these laborers, some jewelry left the ghetto. But because the Germans stripped the Jewish woman on their way out of the ghetto and on their way back, anything larger than a ring or bracelet cannot be spirited out. Only very small items stood a chance of evading German scrutiny, and even that meant risking the bearer's life. Understandably, the slave laborers, acting as a middleman, received a share of what they brought back. They truly helped many people survive. Once a Jewish man gave another Jewish man a gem to sell outside the ghetto. After sneaking away from his work area to make contact with a non-Jew, he removed the yellow star worn by Jews from his sleeve. He walked on the sidewalk Uber regulations. Jews outside the ghetto were forbidden to set foot on the sidewalks, but they were compelled to walk with their German guard in the middle of the street to indicate they were prisoners. A German soldier recognized him as a Jew and shot him for daring to walk on a sidewalk reserved strictly for Aryans and their friends. The martyr was buried, as customary in the ghettos he was killed in. Only afterwards, when the owner of the stone demanded his shem for the bereaved family, the shem which could add a few days of life for the starving family, did someone recall that it had been stitched into a martyr's clothes. I was now asked if it's permissible to open the martyr's grave in order to return this gem to its owner, or the walkie-talkie. Says the Mimamakim, I ruled that it was permissible to open the grave and remove this stone because the owner of the gem was justified in claiming, honor the dead man, but return my gem. In addition, since the owner had requested the return of his gem within 3 days of the burial, it was not yet considered a desecration of the dead to open the grave. Moreover, there was the consideration of obtaining food and of saving lives through him doing what he did. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.